everyone, and welcome back for our fifth episode of In AI We Trust? After having analyzed the economic and sociological implications, after having analyzed whether AI is less or more biased than a human, after having analyzed the implications in legal philosophy, we will now jump on the study of predictive justice, which we will start with a case study. Mario, do you want to give us a rundown of the case study and what we're going to be talking about?
The first case study is with regards of artificial intelligence actually taking more of a forecast role. In this case, it's about the European Court of Human Rights, which in 2016, there was an experiment in which artificial intelligence models were put to the test of predicting judicial decisions. And the conclusion was that for predicting the rulings, there was a 79% accuracy.
And this even for very like complicated cases like the European Court of Human Rights, like, you know, where they're really trying to decide the violation or non-violation of like Article 3, so the prohibition of torture and inhuman or degrading treatment, or Article 6, like the right to a fair trial. I mean, these are very complex decisions that an AI was able to, predict the outcome of what the judge was going to say quite accurately. And it's a little bit different than what we had before when we were talking about the, you know, predicting whether somebody was going to reoffend or not, you know, whether they should be let out on parole, because, I mean, that was trying to predict whether somebody would commit a crime. Here we're actually predicting what the judge is going to decide. So it's kind of a predictive justice, but at a different level, right?
And it's important to note that, you know, the creators of this predictive model, you know, don't suggest that it should replace human judges, but their work does suggest that given enough data, machines can forecast legal decisions of human judges. And the way they did this is they basically treated, I think, over 500 cases as basically just a bag of words. And then, you know, you can really look at those words and find precisely the words that were important in that particular case. We do still have a little comment that we saved from the interview with Bottini in our last episode, though, where she actually attempts to explain a little bit why the model is perhaps really so accurate and precise in the case of the European Court of Human Rights. So let's take a listen to that.
This is another aspect, right? So of course, what I was saying about the strategy of stability and using precedent as a self-imposed constraint means that predictive justice can actually work, because a lot of justices, and especially Supreme Courts or supranational courts, tend to follow their own precedent. And actually, the European Court of Human Rights is a very interesting case study, because being a supranational court, the European Court of Human Rights needs legitimacy and sometimes lacks legitimacy. You can have countries that contest or, you know, would not implement the decisions of the European Court. So the European Court is an active court, which is at the same time very prudent about how it decides, because it is always on the brinks of losing its legitimacy and having states, you know, just stop following the judgments. And they can do that. I mean, there are ways of enforcing the judgments of the European Court, but they're difficult to put in practice, and in the end, the member states decide if they want to comply or not. So the European Court, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, I didn't know this study, but it doesn't surprise me that the accuracy is so high with the court that basically has to follow its own precedent, otherwise it would be seen as, you know, reckless and anti-sovereignty and in the end, illegitimate, and then the court would lose all its powers. What about a national court? A court that would not have all those problems of legitimacy that the European Court has, and that can reverse itself entirely. Think about the US Supreme Court and some of the big, you know, changes in equality and racial discrimination, for example, or abortion rights, because it's something that we're discussing right now, or how we weigh. So big judgments that would be absolute opposite to what the court decided before. And I think, I'm not sure if many studies have been done in internal systems, probably yes. I'm not sure that the accuracy of the prediction would be as high as the European court.
It's a very interesting point, yeah.
But now that we've had a look at how you can predict that, what about specific judges and personalities? Do you think there is a way, or there could be a way to know which arguments, which behaviors, which ways of moving would be most effective for one specific judge? What could work better for one judge, and how can we use that in law? Does that actually, you know, corrupt a bit the neutrality or supposed neutrality that a judge should have?
Well, in a way able to manipulate.
Exactly, manipulations. That's what I mean.
And there is, in fact, an app that's been developed, or it's not an app. It's a legal service called Context from the company LexisNexis. And what it does is it uses machine learning to analyze court decisions, and as well as the judges who actually make them. The idea of this data-driven tool is to try and make lawyers, I mean, it's a service for lawyers. It's supposed to make them better, faster, more persuasive. And so this service called Context, what it does is it can look at judges, individual judges, it can look at entire courts, it can look at other lawyers, it can look at, you know, which witnesses you should bring in, and look basically at, you know, which, you know, basically saying what if you could know which arguments would be most effective in a specific case, which lawyer would be most effective, what will the other opposing lawyer do that you can maybe use their own strategies against them, which witness would be most effective in this case. And so what this software does is it looks at like the key language you can use. You look at cases for a judge, you extract the citations that the judge uses a lot, you find the language in those citations, you connect them to the decisions that they end up making. Doing this manually would be insane, right? I mean, you know, judges have thousands of opinions with which they quote thousands of different citations, hundreds of different motion types. But you really hone in on the language that you need to use. To do that, you need this machine learning algorithm. This is something that can't really be done by a human. But you eliminate that chance. You eliminate that fear of missing the key witness or the key argument that's going to win you the case. Basically, in short, rather than citing your own opinion, you, as a lawyer, you can cite precisely the judge's opinion. And this goes even further. I mean, you can also, like I said, you can understand the lawyer you're arguing against, what rhetoric they use, what language, and use those legal which legal strategies they use, and use those arguments against them. You can also try and hire the lawyer that's most effective for your specific case. What do you guys think of this kind of the implications of this kind of software?
Well, they rather scare me philosophically as well. I mean, isn't the principal thing to have the right to a fair trial, so there to be the right competition between the two parties, and not manipulating someone's personal features, behaviors, saying the right thing? I mean, doesn't that interfere with justice?
Isn't that the job of a lawyer as is?
It might be, but perhaps we perceive it to be much less intrusive when it's the job of a lawyer, because that's the ability of the lawyer, but not a machine that is programmed to trick and know how to trick.
It's at a completely different scale.
Exactly, it's at a completely different scale. Mario, what do you think? I mean, is that really fair to have to design and create an algorithm that can manipulate the judge? Or do we want to
understand the judge's most intimate biases
and
it's human and the most intimate and human, let's say, shortcomings, you know, which we as other normal humans, you know, can't necessarily understand.
And Eustem, what do you think?
Well, that is it would be manipulation if you consider that a legal system's virtue is on independence of factors, under randomness perhaps. But if that's not the definition of fairness that we're working with, then it is just a way to frame or give advantages to those that possess these instruments.
And if we can basically manipulate a judge to the extent that we can basically, you know, influence their decision, I mean, that's also influencing their independence. That's the point, right? The independence of a judge is essential in the rule of law. But and if we can make it that way, we can also say that we could predict with certainty if we use these methods, we'll get this outcome. So we have a certain maybe problem of separation of power as well.
Oh, we definitely do. We definitely do. And how do you keep the, you know, the judicial power has to be independent from all other powers. That's the idea. Not only does it have to be separated, but that's the rule of law is a cardinal liberal principle. Where are our societies going if we can influence that?
But then, what's the answer? How do we stop people from manipulating judges to this extent? Do you introduce an AI judge after all? That can't be manipulated in that same way. That doesn't have those human biases. Well, if we do that, we have all the problems that we mentioned in our last podcast regarding legal philosophy, regarding the accountability of those decisions.
The moral interpretation, the common sense, the intuition.
Exactly. So
these two things seem to interfere, but don't we need a regulation maybe? Don't you think that...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, we live in a capitalist world, you know. These are businesses that are offering these types of services. They're trying to make money. They're trying to offer services to lawyers to make them more efficient, right? To make them, try and get more clients, you know, make them more successful. And so where there's money... this technology, it's very hard to halt. It's being developed now. It's being developed. It'll continue being developed. So I don't know. It's really a very tough question. And it's also the question, if we can't halt the development of these technologies, we come back to that same question we had earlier with the malpractice. I mean, the lawyer needs to work in the best interests of their client. And if these technologies are at their disposal, would they be legally obligated to use them? And so you really have, it's a weird convergence of problems that, you know, it's a question of our time and we can't really wait to answer them. We need to start thinking about them now. Otherwise, we won't have a chance anymore and it'll get ahead of us.
So to conclude, we've had a look at the first case study from the European Court and the second case study about LexisNexis. And so what we can really get out of this predictive justice and what actually happens when we can predict the outcomes of human judges is that we need to be careful about what this actually can bring to as to the meaning of law, the rule of law, the independence of law, and so on. So really our conclusion is to be careful and that the implications of a digital shift in this domain of predictive justice can be rather dangerous for the meaning of justice itself. So stay tuned for our conclusion because we will be concluding in the next episode and sort of wrapping up all the implications we have studied to answer our principal question, which still is, to what extent and how can there be a digital shift in the domain of law, and is there really space for AI in settling legal disputes? So see you in our conclusion.